Born in Asia Minor, probably in Smyrna, around the year 140, Irenaeus is first heard of in the year 177, when he was sent to Rome with a letter to Pope Eleutherius from the Church of Lyon.
It was the time of the persecution of Marcus Aurelius. More than 40 priests had been martyred, and many others were in prison, including the 90-year-old Bishop Pothinus, who died there of ill treatment. In their letter to the Pope, the Lyon clergy recounted the sufferings of their church. But their chief concern was to inform the Pope of the danger to truth and unity represented by the heresy of Montanism, which was infiltrating from the East. This heresy, among other things, denied the power of the church to forgive sins.
Irenaeus was to become deeply involved in the refutation of heresy. On his return to Lyon, he was appointed bishop, in succession to Pothinus, and was soon taken up in refuting the Gnostics. Not long afterwards, he began writing his great work, generally known as Against Heresies. The books, there are five of them, were written probably in the brief intervals between pastoral duties and took nearly 20 years. Irenaeus begins like a personal letter.
You will not expect of me, dwelling among Celts and conversing for the most part in a foreign language, skill in discourse, which I have never learnt, nor power of composition, which I have not practised, nor eloquence of phrase, nor persuasiveness, of which I know nothing. Rather, in simplicity and truth and plainness, the things which are written to you lovingly, you will lovingly accept, as a kind of seeds and principles, which you will cause to bear much fruit in the wide field of your understanding, forcefully representing to those who are with you what I have but faintly outlined.
In the second century, when Irenaeus lived, theology had just begun. And it began with an attempt to explain to the Greeks and Romans a religion which was far newer to them than to the Jewish world where it had originated.
It was harder work for him who had received the apostleship of the Gentiles than for such as preached the Son of God to the circumcision. For these were helped by the Scriptures, which the Lord confirmed and fulfilled, being, when he came, such as he was announced. But here it was a strange sort of teaching and a new doctrine, that the gods of the nations, so far from being gods, are rather images of demons, and that there is but one God who is above all princedom and dominion and power and every name that is named, and that his word, a person naturally invisible, had become such as to be touched and seen among men, and descended even unto death, and that the death of the cross, and that such as believe in him shall be incorruptible and impassible, and receive the kingdom of heaven. And these things were preached to the Gentiles in discourse, without scriptures. Wherefore they did work harder who preached to the Gentiles. And again, the faith of the Gentiles is shown to be more noble, in that they attain the word of God without instruction in letters.
Irenaeus wrote not so much to win pagans as to refute heretics and enlighten Catholics. Heresy had already appeared even during the apostles' time, and they had warned their disciples against it. But it wasn't until after their deaths that it became a real threat. Gnosticism was the first serious heresy. It denied almost everything and brought home to Christians the menace heresy was likely to be. It became essential to have some test so as to be able to detect it easily. Irenaeus developed the manner of testing falsity. He set down the fundamental doctrines of Christianity and earned for himself the title Father of Catholic Theology.
Although Gnosticism was the most dangerous, Irenaeus was concerned with all the heresies, and he was fully aware that to do battle with them meant to know what they were about.
Whoever would convert them must carefully acquaint himself with their rules or arguments, it being impossible for one to cure any sick persons not knowing the ailment of the same. For which cause, they who have been before us, yea, and much better men than we, were nevertheless unable to dispute among the Valentinians, as not knowing their system.
Gnosticism was the generic name of a number of heretical systems. But they had a common element of teaching, that salvation comes through knowledge, the possession of the few. For them, all matter was a corruption of the divine. Christ was an intermediary of God with matter. Existence was an evil to be escaped from by knowledge. Church historian Henry Chadwick comments,
"None of the Gnostic sects agreed with one another. They were all continually modifying their views. To Irenaeus, Gnosticism was a ragbag of heathen speculations with bits taken from different philosophers to dress out a bogus, anti-rational mythology."
Of the Gnostics, Irenaeus has this to say.
"Is it likely that St. Paul should have held back knowledge from St. Luke in order to entrust it to these men, whose boast it is to explain the greatness of that power which is truly unspeakable? Their silence is full of babbling, but uttering no kind of truth."
Among the Gnostics could be found no unity of belief.
"So many diversities are there amongst them concerning one and the same thing, maintaining as they do different meanings for the same scriptures. And at the reading of one and the same passage, they all contract their eyebrows and shake their heads, and say that they themselves indeed perfectly comprehend the passage in its exceeding depth, but that all cannot receive the greatness of the meaning therein contained, and therefore that silence is a main point with the wise. And so they go their ways, all of them, and whatever their number, so many opinions do they take with them on one and the same subject. They bear about with them, unseen, their own sharp thoughts."
The clear mind of Irenaeus gave Christian theology stability and coherence, and his refutation of the Gnostics is still considered an essential and remarkably fair-minded source for the history of the second century sects. But although deeply intellectual, Irenaeus is more than this, a man of love, as Maisie Ward writes.
"He sees love growing as knowledge grows.
While we practice ourselves in inquiry concerning the mystery and ordinance of the living God, we must grow also in love of him who does so great things for us. For we never come to an end in our loving of God, but the more we shall have looked upon him, so much the more we love him. And the more we love him, the more glory we shall receive of him, since we are always in the Father's sight. Our witness before God and man must be to assent to God and to follow his word and to love him above all things, and one's neighbour as oneself. And man is man's neighbour. Yield your heart to him, soft and tractable, and keep well the shape in which the workmaster has shaped you, lest you be hardened and so lose the print of his fingers. For to make is proper to God's kindness, and to be made is proper to man's nature. The glory of God is man fully alive."
The life of Irenaeus is of great importance for the history of the Church. Yet, although we know little of its external events, the man himself comes through to us in his writings. A fragment preserved by Eusebius in his History of the Church is a letter from Irenaeus to Florinus, a Roman priest who apostatized and joined the Valentinians. In this extract, Irenaeus is reminiscing about his early life. "The first age of my life," he calls it, when he sat at the feet of the great Bishop Polycarp, who was martyred at the age of 80.
"When I was still a boy, I saw you in Asia Minor with Polycarp, doing splendidly in the royal court and striving to gain his approbation. I remember the events of those days better than the ones of recent years. What a boy learns grows with the mind and becomes a part of him, so that I am able to describe the very place in which the blessed Polycarp sat as he discoursed, his goings and his comings, the manner of his life, his physical appearance, as well as the discourses he delivered to the people, and how he spoke of his familiar conversation with John and with the rest of those who had seen the Lord, and how he would recall their words to mind. These things were told me at that time through the mercy of God, and I listened to them attentively and noted them down, not on paper, but in my heart."
The name Irenaeus is peacemaker, and his mission was very often that of ambassador of peace. In the year 190, he intervened in the controversy about the date of Easter. Pope Victor wished to establish the Roman date as uniform custom for the universal church. The church in Asia Minor, which celebrated Easter at the same time as the Jewish Passover, a week before Rome, refused to conform. Victor threatened excommunication.
Irenaeus wrote to the Pope, reminding him that 35 years earlier, Polycarp had travelled to Rome to discuss some divergences of custom with Bishop Anicetus. At that time, Rome did not keep Easter annually, but neither bishop regarded the divergence as a ground for breach of communion, and they parted in amicable disagreement.
Irenaeus saw Christ as peacemaker for the fulfilment of justice in fallen man.
The all-powerful Word of God, who never fails in justice, acted justly even in dealing with the spirit of rebellion. For it was by persuasion, not by force, that he redeemed his own property.
Irenaeus died probably around the year 202 to 203. A late tradition had him martyred under the Emperor Septimius Severus, but this is today considered highly improbable.
The feast of St. Irenaeus was not extended to the whole Western Church until 1922. Previously, it had only been celebrated in the East. Before he died, Irenaeus witnessed the looting and partial destruction of Lyon in 197. His attachment to tradition, his love and knowledge of the scriptures, depth of faith and breadth of knowledge, a liberal education and an inquiring mind combined to make him one of the great church fathers.
A comment by French Father Le Breton, says Maisie Ward, sums up the breadth of vision of Irenaeus and his beauty of character.
There is nothing of the partisan in him. He is not a man of one school. His only school is the church. His only party is Christ's. The whole of the Bible is sacred to him and intimately known to him. The teaching of St. Paul stands out in bold relief in Irenaeus. So also does the Gospel of St. John. He is at once a man of Asia, a man of Rome, a bishop of the Gauls, all united in the embracing charity of a truly Catholic soul.